Take your marker and put it at Job chapter 19. Job 19, well, that's going to be the basis of our study. We'll come back and forth to that. Job chapter 19. Glad you're here. Certainly glad we want to join in with John, especially those that are visiting with us. We're glad you're here and hope you come back anytime that you might have. You can't see her, but back in the foyer, Judy Swan is with us today. First time she's been with us since her surgery. Really glad to know that. Things are going well for her. Job chapter 19. We're going to begin, but just by way of introduction, just one thing that we all have in common, every one of us, is the fact that pain has come into our life. It's what I've heard called before the great equalizer. It doesn't matter who we are, what our background is, pain, suffering, disappointment, it's universal, and it touches us all. It touches us through issues of health. There are people here who would love to have their health different. There are people who, as Larry mentioned in his prayer, would be here with us right now if their health would allow it. There are some who feel this pain and this hurt because of issues of family, whatever they may be. There are some who have felt and feel this issue because there are people we love more than we love ourselves who've fallen away. They've gone back through apostasy and they're not ready to stand before judgment, and it eats at us. Whatever the issues may be, we have all felt this. And the book of Job speaks to these issues like no other book that there is. And we know what Job didn't know. He's suffering like none of us have experienced. And he's doing it unexplained. He's doing it with no explanation at all. He doesn't know why. God knows. Satan knows what he's doing. Job was never told about that conversation that God and Satan had. His friends who are just jumping on with both feet on Job, they don't know, and yet they all have these powerful statements that where they make these accusations, and Job doesn't understand any of it. And there are things that go on into our lives, some of those issues of pain and suffering that we have to deal with. We don't know why. We don't have an explanation of why us, why this, why now. We don't know. And so if you ever wondered, how in the world could Job have gotten through that? He got through what he didn't know because of what he did know. Just read verse 25 with me, the first phrase in verse 25. But as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives. And that's what we're going to base our study on. It. That statement that he made, that incredible statement of faith. And that is the difference between hope and despair. With all the things Job does not understand, with all the things Job doesn't have a clue about, he doesn't pretend to have a clue, all the things he doesn't know, but he is firmly convinced of certain things, and this is it. I know my Redeemer lives. And that was a big part of his foundation. And so that's what we want to look at today, because we're not suffering like Job suffered. That would be ridiculous for us to even think. I don't think that it's possible for in our day and age, at least not in the culture we live in now, to suffer like he suffered. But we suffer. And we're not going to understand all the things of why. But if we can know this, we can endure just like he endured. So I want us to go back to the original context. Let's go back and just kind of remind ourselves of what many of us know. There may be some here who do not. But Job has lost his family. He has lost his health. He has lost his possessions. He has lost self-respect. He lost everything. And he doesn't know why. His friends come. And they basically, in different ways, began to tell him, Job, I don't know what you did, but you must have done something, and it must have been horribly bad. There's some evil in your life that you are keeping secret. There is sin in your life that you are not coming clean about, and God's punishing you for that. That's what they all... They verbalized it different ways, but all of their conclusions was, if you just come clean, if you just finally admit whatever God's punishing you for something, just tell us what it is, and this will be over with. And Job's answer to... every time was, no, that's not right. He's not claiming perfection. He's not claiming sinlessness. But he said, that is not what this is about. And he stood his ground. He didn't know why he was suffering, except that it was not for the purpose and the reason that they said he was suffering. And so back up into verse 23, look at what he says. Oh, if my words were written. You see, this was a personal conversation they were had. Job's friends have come to him. But this is a conversation. They're just kind of spitballing back and forth with each other. But he said, I tell you what I wish. I wish what I'm telling you was written down. We'll let future generations, you're judging me, and you're doing it in a way that you don't understand all the answers about. I don't know why, but I know it's not what you're saying. And I just wish we could write this conversation down. And he begins to, it gets stronger language as he goes on. Look in verse 23. Oh, if my words were written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, in a scroll. He didn't just want them written. He wants them written in a way that they could be saved so that future generations could read about it. He gets stronger. Verse 24, that they were engraved with an iron pen and a rock forever. Oh, no, let's not write them down. Let's chisel them into stone. Some of the early forms of writing that we have found have been drawings in caves and chisels and marks in caves and on rocks. There's a lot of permanency to that, right? He said, I wish it was written. Because future generations will know things that you don't know, is what he's telling his friends. Let's put it in a book. No, let's mark it in rock. I want future generations to know. And let me just pause for just a minute. Did Job get his wish? It wasn't written into stone. It was reserved in the Holy Scriptures. And here we are. I don't know how many thousands of years later. Job was, when you read through the book of Job, it had to have been written during the patriarchal days. Just by the ages that we read about. This is a patriarchal period. This was a long time ago. And here we are. We do know why he was suffering. We do know more than the friends did. And, oh, just look. I want to be just, he says. I'm not going to be justified in your eyes, it doesn't appear. But let's write it down. And future generations will see that I was just. Now, why would he's willing to wait out for vindication. He's willing to wait out for these future generations. But that permanent record, whether it was scrolled or chiseled, that permanent record wouldn't do any good for anyone if the future held nothing better for him than his present. So why is it that he feels there's a better future than a present? And now we're back to where we started. Because I know this. Write it down, chisel it, save it. Future generations can make a judgment about it. And because there is a vindicator, and he is alive and he is well. I know that my Redeemer lives, that he will stand at the latter day on the earth. And though after my skin, worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh, I will see God. I will see him for myself, and my eyes shall behold and not another, though my reins, my heart be consumed, be fainting within me. He's got this incredible hope. He makes these incredible statements of confidence. And if we can just know what he knew, he's going through more than we will ever go through. He's enduring more than we will ever endure. And he's doing it because of what he knows. So let's talk about that. What is this confidence coming from? I know my Redeemer lives. That word for Redeemer there, I guess the best word that we would be familiar with would be vindicator. When me and you hear the word Redeemer, we have been taught well to hear the word Redeemer and think of one who is brought back. One who has been bought out of slavery. And that is right. And that's usually that's the default definition. But it's really not the definition here. The definition here, and that's why the newer translations use the word vindicator. I know that my vindicator lives. And so here's, in all of these clouds of his life, here's this ray of confidence and hope just shining through. His present doesn't make a bit of sense to him. But with full confidence, he believes in a future release, a future relief from that. He's not referring to the blood avenger. Again, this is a unique word for this text. It's not talking about, you know, the blood avenger that the law of Moses allowed for. It's talking, the best way I guess that we might could be able to get an idea of it. He's speaking of a restorer of honor. He's speaking of one that would have been considered to be a close relative usually. The aid of a loved one who comes to solve a particular problem, whatever that problem might be. I know my Redeemer lives. Now we know in verse 26, he says, I will see God. He is not referring to somebody in his family. As a matter of fact, his family has rejected him too. His sons and daughters are dead. His wife has cursed, and that's not this vindicator, this Redeemer he's talking about. Context is very, very clear that he's referring to God here. My Redeemer lives. I don't know if I'm going to live. I don't know if I'm going to make it through this. But my Vindicator will. And you can write it down if you want to. As we would say, mark my words. Write it down, scroll it, book it, chisel it. Mark my words. The day will come when I will be vindicated. I might die. My Vindicator lives. And if we can just kind of paraphrase this a little bit, I don't understand what's going on. I don't know why these things are happening, but I trust that my Vindicator lives. And he is right, and he is just, and I will be delivered. That helped you endure. To have this confidence like Job had, revealed to him somehow. You might wonder, how does he know? He knows. If we're right about the time period, this is patriarchal day, somehow he has become aware. I know my Redeemer lives. Do me and you know that? Do me and you know that vindication will come, whatever Satan may accuse us of, whatever Satan's angels and ministers and servants and minions, whatever comes to us. Do we know what Job knows? Because he knows that Vindicator is going to have the last say. That's really what that phrase is saying. Verse 25, I know my Redeemer, he lives. I might not live, he lives. And he will stand at last. He, as we would say, will have the last say. You know, that's exactly what happens. We know what happens in the rest of this book. In Job 19, the friends don't know yet. But we've had this, we know how this book ends. Starting at about chapter 4 through around chapter 36, 37 or so, 38, is the friends and Job having at it. And there are a lot of things said about God. And Job is a part of it. There are times when Job, he just questions the very righteousness of God, the very judgment of God. There's a lot of things said. And then somewhere around verse 42 or so, God begins to speak. And he has the last say. That's what Job was saying way back in chapter 19. It's the idea of truth is going to be known. Right is going to be done. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs in the meantime. But the last say is not going to be from Bildad. It's not going to be from those friends. The last say is going to be from the Redeemer himself. He will have the last word in all of this. So, me and you may have a lot of evil things said about us. There may be some unjust things said about us. But we know the judge has the last say in those things. That's what Job knew. And when me and you know that, how much easier does enduring become? And then you get this incredible statement of faith. Verse 25, I know my Vindicator lives. Verse 25, I know he has the last say when the time is right. And in verse 26, I know that though my skin is destroyed by worms. And he's not talking about, by the way, we know Job is going through a lot of fleshly problems. He has these boils and he has these things from it said from the head of his top of his head to the bottom of his feet. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about when I'm dead. My Redeemer lives. I might not live. I'm going to the grave. And when I'm in the grave, I will decompose. Worms will eat me. The bugs will eat me. I'm becoming fertilizer for tulips. But here's what I know. I know that though my skin is destroyed by worms and this body destroyed, in my flesh I will see God. I will see Him for myself. My eyes will behold Him, not somebody else's. And my heart is fainting here, but I know this. And what you got here, if this is patriarchal days, you got the first event in Scripture. You got the first recorded event in Scripture of a bodily resurrection. When you look through, it was beyond my ability to read. I'm looking through. Apparently, the Hebrew in verse 26 and 27 is a little fuzzy. It's a little hard to. It's hard for, even for Hebrew speakers and readers, the ones who know the language. There's a lot of trouble with how they interpret this. So I'm not even going to try to go into that. But what's clear about it is, we don't have to know all the ins and outs of the language. What's clear about this is Job saying, I know that my death does not end fellowship with God. That's all we got to know. We don't have to know all the ins and outs of the language. What he knows is, my Redeemer lives. What he knows is, my Redeemer has the last say in this. And what he knows is, when I'm dead and gone, I'll still be with him. Fellowship will still exist. And you've got a bodily resurrection being known by Job a long time ago. How does that help you endure? He's looking forward to putting off this earthly body that's given him so much trouble and so much pain. There's older ones in this room who knows that feeling right now. Hadn't felt good in so long, you've got to change your definition of what a good day is. We were talking downstairs in our class last week. We talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire. Today we talked about Daniel in the den of lions. And the point we were making, and the kids got it. Even if they had not been delivered, even if they had died in those situations, they're with the Lord. And here's Job recognizing that. When the worms are eating my dead body, I'm with the Lord. And he knows it. And if me and you can know what he knew, we'll endure whatever comes our way. So let's make some applications about what we may have to endure. What are some applications we can make just from these, three or four verses here? The first one that we can get is, make sure we understand, Job had some serious questions, and yet he's still able to make a statement like this. Job does not know. The reason he can't answer his friends any better is because he doesn't know what's going on either. He just knows the friends are wrong. He knows their conclusion is not right. But he can't offer a better one. He's as lost as they are. And that's important for you and I. We got to understand that. Real, genuine faith does not mean we don't question some things. Have you ever had some questions about why God is allowing this in your life? Have you ever gone to bed and sleep doesn't come because you've been praying for this and it just doesn't seem to be doing any good? Doesn't mean you don't have faith. Doesn't mean that there's no love. It's just that we don't know. There are things we don't know. Job had a lot of things he did not know. And when those times come in our life, when those discouragement times come, he's our example. Easy service. I hope that makes some sense. The times when serving God is easy, those times are few and far between. What is more often and more likely, living in the world that we live in, sometimes serving God is the last thing from easy. To use a phrase we'd be familiar with, it just takes dogged determination. I will serve when it's hard and when it's difficult. That's the determination that we made. That's the determination that we make. The very word endure. We use that word in the Bible, full of it, New and Old Testament. All the admonitions were that very word: endurance, patience, perseverance. What does that infer? As often as that word appears, what does it infer? It means it's not easy. Have you ever, one time in your life, eat a Snickers bar and say, well, you know, somebody's got to do it. I guess I'll endure this. No, you have not. The good things, the fun things. No, we don't endure that. And yet, over and over, the Christian life, given this admonition of enduring, that infers it's not always easy. It's not always, it wasn't easy for Job, and yet he's still enduring because of what he knows. And we can too. Another application we make is, this was a godly man. He was, and yet he's still suffering all of these things. Look in 1 Peter 4. 1 Peter 4. Actually, because me and you know what the friends don't know, if this was a Bible class, I would just ask the question, why is it that Job is suffering so much? It's because he was godly. That's what the whole thing was about. God asking Satan, have you seen my servant Job? There's no more righteous than he. There's no one on the face of the earth more blameless than he. Oh, well, let me have a shot at him. Yeah, he's served you all right. But that's because you blessed him. You put this wall around him. I mean, he's got everything under the sun. Let me take some of that stuff away. Let me start hurting him a little bit. He's not serving you because he loves you. He serves you because he's getting a lot of good stuff out of it. And God basically just handed him over. With the exception of taking his life, Satan had just a blank slate. Do what you want. And why? Because of Job's sinfulness? No, because of his blamelessness. Because of his unrighteousness, is that why he's suffering? No, it's because of his righteousness that's causing him to suffer. He's a godly man, and he's suffering. And so, when you and I give our heart to God and get beat up over it, when you and I give our lives to God and bad things happen to us because of that, should we think that's a strange thing? 1 Peter 4 speaks a lot about that. Look at verse 2. Talk about the Christian who has turned and converted, and as Bill talked about Friday night, been transformed. He's talking about the transformed person. They no longer, verse 2, live the rest of their time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. They have stopped living a certain way, and they have begun living another way. How does the community, how does the old friends, how do they respond to that? Verse 3. The time past of our life, we worked the desire of the Gentiles. We walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, partyings, drinkings, abominable idolatries. And they think it strange that you do not run with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Why are they speaking evil of these people? It's because of what they're not doing anymore. It's because they used to do these things, but they had transformed their life, and they don't do them anymore, and now they are spoken evil of. Look in verse 12. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial that will test you, as though some strange thing has happened. So don't be shocked. Don't have your mind blown because of this. It's not strange. Look in verse 14. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you. For the Spirit of glory and of God rest on you. On their part, evil is spoken. On your part, God is glorified. Not only is it not strange, it actually, if we have faith, we can see good things out of it. Look in verse 16. If any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. Let him glorify God in this name. Job was a godly man, and he suffered like crazy. When bad things happen to us that we don't understand, bad things happen at our job, bad things happen with our health, bad things happen with our family, and we don't get it. We'll just join the crowd. None of us get it. We can't read about people who got it all, who understood it all. It doesn't mean our faith isn't strong. It doesn't mean our service hasn't been acceptable. Job's friends were wrong in their conclusion. Don't think because bad things happen to us that that's strange. God's told us they're going to happen. And if we know what we need to know, we'll be able to endure that. And the interesting thing, the wonderful thing, we can be just as blessed as Job was. We can be just as godly as Job was. God saw Job's godliness. We could be just like him. Job was not sinless. Do not make the mistake. Both in Job 1 and in Job 2, he was called blameless, not sinless. That's two different things. Jesus was sinless. Job was not sinless. But the blame of that sin had been removed from him. And me and you can be just like him. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. The truth is, not only can we be just like him, we better be just like him. Blameless is not a nice suggestion. Blameless is a command for every last one of us. Philippians chapter 2. Look in verse 14. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that you might be blameless and harmless, sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation among whom you shine as light in this world. Not only is blamelessness possible, it's expected of sons of God. Are you a son of God? Are you a daughter of God? Are you a child of God? Because if so, He expects us to be lights in a world. He expects us to be straight in a world of crookedness. And He expects us to be blameless and harmless to those we come into contact with. Job was not sinless. He was blameless. You and I, except for the youngest in here who haven't reached an ability to do that, you and I, who we have sinned, but we have a Redeemer that lives. We have a Vindicator who lives. And the blame of those sins, we don't have to suffer for them. Does that help us endure? Do we know that? Have we took advantage of that? But we better be blameless. The idea, that statement that so, oh, you know, I'm only human. I'm just human. That's not a statement of humility. That's a statement of us excusing our irresponsibility. We are to be blameless. And don't try to water that down any. And for us to be blameless, we're going to have to trust. In those things that we don't know, the things we don't understand, when the details get foggy. I don't get it, Lord. I don't understand it. We trust. Look in 2 Timothy 1. There's a lot of things going to happen in our life that we're not going to understand. We're not going to understand the ways and the whys. And God is not going to come have a personal conversation with us in our living room about it. But He will have the last say. That's what Job knew. And that's what Paul knew. Talk about suffering, the beatings. Both Gentile and the Jewish beatings were 39 stripes, but 40 saved one. The Gentile beatings, that was plural too. Gentiles had no such restriction. They just beat. And if this soldier's arm wore out, you just pass the baton to the next soldier and he picks up right where you left off. We don't know how many stripes those would have included. The imprisonments, the stonings, the shipwrecks, the false accusations, all those trials that Paul went endured in chapter 22, chapter 24, chapter 26 with Agrippa and Felix and Festus. All that was on false charges. All of it was on lies. How do you endure all that, Paul? Verse 12. 2 Timothy 1, verse 12. For the which cause I suffer these things. And he has suffered more than me and you've suffered. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed. For I know. Oh, we've heard that before. Job endured. Not because of what he understood in the moment. Not because of the pleasure of the present. He endured because of what he knew. I'm not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed. And I am persuaded, I am convinced, I know that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. What's he know? I know my Redeemer lives. I know, I am convinced, he will have the last say. He has made promises to me. I have committed things to him. And by the way, what was that was committed? Soul. Paul's committed his soul to him. You and I, sons of God, we've committed our soul to him. He says, I'm convinced that he'll keep it. I'm convinced that every promise, we sing about promises today, every promise that was made, I know he's faithful to him. That's what Paul is saying. That's how he's able to face death so squarely in the eye. That's how he's able to do what he's doing and enduring what he's doing. The hope of the gospel is that our Redeemer lives. He will have the last say. And it's the song we sing sometimes. This is my Father's world. Let me never forget that, oh, the wrong seems oh so strong. God is ruler yet. He'll have the last say. That's a paraphrase of what that verse is teaching. This is God's world, and in time, right's going to happen. And the things we don't understand doesn't remove fellowship from him. And as Job well knew, the reward wasn't here and now. To live now is to hurt. To live now is to be disappointed. To live now is to be discouraged. That's not what it's about. Perfection. Just think of Jesus. Perfection did not keep Jesus from suffering on this earth. I mean, you're not even perfect. I mean, if Jesus in his perfection had to suffer like he suffered, if he had to endure what he had to endure in perfection, why would we in our imperfection think it strange that we should have to suffer a little? It's not about the here and the now. Paul talked about the thorn that he prayed so diligently for. It's those thorns that if we'll let them, if we know what we need to know, if we know what Job knew, we know what Paul knew, those thorns can keep us from getting too comfortable here. Because there's a lot of things about our life that can make us pretty comfortable. And it's those very things, those disappointments, and it's those discouragements. Just play the games for just a minute. Imagine our life was the proverbial bowl of cherries. Everything's perfect. Everything's great. Everything has worked out for us exactly like we wanted it, exactly when we wanted it. Life is sweet. How often would we be thinking about heaven? If life was perfect here, how often are we looking for something better? If life is everything about life is here is exactly as we would always want it to be, would heaven cross our mind? Probably not very much. But when the thorns happen, and the hurts happen, and the disappointments happen, it can get our eyes where they need to be. It can get our mind where we need to be. It can get our thoughts on what we need to know. Sing with me. Just the first verse. It's number 479 in your book, but I don't think you'll have to. I know my Redeemer lives. Sing it like you've never sang it before. First verse that we know so well. I know that my Redeemer lives and ever prays for me. I know eternal.
from sin and sorrow free. I know that my Redeemer lives. I know eternal life He gives. I know that my Redeemer lives.
Then we can endure. If we know that, we can endure. When we have those Job days, to whatever extent they are, but His grit and His determination and His knowledge of better days, that can help us get through ours. But the key to this, how do we get to that state of blamelessness? We are not going to make a statement that we are sinless. None of us would be so bold. It's just so contrary to the very thing Scripture says. If anyone says he has not sinned, he's a liar and the truth is not in him. So how can the sinful become blameless? How is it that we who have sinned are no longer accountable for those sins? Where does the blame go? The blame is washed away by that Redeemer. The Redeemer who lives. The Vindicator who will have the last say at judgment. His blood that we remembered, His death that we remembered not very long ago, cleanses us, washes us, purifies us, and makes us blameless and spotless before God. If you're not a Christian, that comes in the waters of baptism. Faith will get you there. If you believe He is who He says He is, if you're willing to confess Him as your Lord, give your life to Him, be baptized and wash those sins away, you'll be blameless. For those of us that are, but maybe the discouragements have gotten the best of us, those unanswered questions that we don't know has shielded us of what we do know. We know who our Redeemer is. We know what He expects of us, and we know what the standards are we're going to be judged by. If there's anything of blame, fix it today. We're ready to help you in any way that we can. Do it while we stand and sing.